From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show, and I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of today's show. The rest of today's show is available for download and on-demand listening at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome back to my show. 76% of the African-American boys in Baltimore are dropouts, some even before they enter high school. In response to this, a philanthropist established the Baraka School, which involved sending 20 kids to study in rural Kenya for 2 years. Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady followed one of those classes of young boys from Baltimore to Kenya and back. For their documentary, The Boys of Baraka, it won the special jury prize at the South by Southwest Film Festival this summer and has been shortlisted for an Oscar. And I'm very pleased that it is brought its co-directors, Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady, as well as one of the students involved, Devon Brown, to my show today. Devon, can you hear us? Well, Devon will be there by phone at some point, we hope. Meanwhile, I throw this out to both of you, Heidi and Rachel. How bad is the Baltimore public school system? Is it, are the problems that we're talking about only in the poor, in the minority areas, or does it cover the whole system?
Well, that's an interesting question because the unusual thing about Baltimore is that there seems to be poverty in the majority of the city. So I think that the public school system is it's large. There's a lot of kids there, and the whole thing seems to be pretty bad, suffering pretty badly.
How does it compare to other cities with large minority populations?
It's worse than most cities in the United States. But if you look at inner city Chicago, inner city Detroit, Philadelphia, Oakland, it's not that different. I mean, it suffers from the same problems that most inner city America does.
Devon.
Yes, sir.
What was school like for you before you went to Baraka?
Well, and before I went to Africa, I was failing classes, and I was a very disruptive child, in the schools, and I was failing. I wasn't doing the work. I was, talking back to the teachers and hooking classes and running the hallways. So I was just one of them behaviors. The child that's behaved every day.
But you always wanted to have a religious vocation. So how did you work that out? Can you be a boy preacher and be a disruptive kid in school at the same time?
No. as me growing up, I found out that I can't. Either I'm going to be religious or not. So.
Mm-hmm. And so you stopped misbehaving. And the Baraka School was really the thing that turned you around, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
So, Heidi, tell us about the Baraka School. How did you find out about it?
Well, we found out about the Baraka program in sort of the most banal way a documentary filmmaker can, which is you read about it. We read a lot of periodicals. We're always looking for ideas for new stories. And I saw a back issue of a rumpled up waterlogged Time magazine that was stuck under a desk at a production company I was working at. So I can't take a lot of credit for looking for this idea. And I was sort of sifting through it, and I saw this article about this school, this program that took inner city kids 10,000 miles away from home to start over in Africa at this school. And it seemed like a crazy, harebrained, insane, strange idea and the makings of a very interesting documentary film.
Well, Rachel, I've heard that other filmmakers and journalists were interested in the Baraka program, but none were granted access.
Luckily, yes, that's true.
How did the two of you get this?
We were persistent. Heidi had a standing appointment to call and bug them, I think, every 3 months. And after doing this for about a year, the administrator that ultimately gave us access gave us the green light, and we were all excited and thrilled. Of course, we didn't have a dime and no funders and no visible means to make the film, but we had gotten access, so it was a victory, and we started making the film basically, the next day.
Isn't Kenya, which has had a troubled political situation for much of its history, an odd place to create a school like this?
It's definitely an odd choice. And the Baraka School, the idea behind the Baraka School wasn't really about Africa. It was about removing, extracting the most troubled kids, the most troublemaking kids from the public school system and putting them somewhere else. It could have been North Dakota. It could have been rural Virginia. It was financially and economically more sound for them to try it in Kenya, where the land had been donated.
Devon, did you want to go to Baraka?
Yes, sir. You know, when I got the information, and a lady, one of the recruiters, Miss Jackson, came to the school, and she gave us information about the movie and everything, about the school. And, you know, I was thrilled about it, so I went home, and I asked my grandmother if I could go to the school. And at first, you know, she said, no, you know, you can't go, I don't know. And then, you know, I kept on begging her, and then eventually she started to sign the papers, and, you know, I turned it in, and, you know, so I wanted to go because I wanted to, you know, change. I wanted to become a better person, you know, so.
Do you think that it benefited all of your classmates?
I don't know if it benefit, you know, any of my classmates by me going. But I know that, now I know that it's beneficial because now that I went, I can come back and share, I can share the things that I have learned to help others to become successful. And, you know, so I think it is kind of beneficial.
Well, Heidi, you followed four boys, Richard, Ramesh, Mantre, and Devon. Did you choose them for any specific reason?
Well, you know, casting this film was extraordinarily fun because the pool of boys who applied to go to the Baraka School were all giant personalities, very charismatic. They had a lot going on. So truthfully, any three or four of those kids would have led to a wonderful story. We cast these kids because they were all so different from each other. We kind of looked for icons. The troublemaker, you know, the charismatic class clown, of course, Devon Brown. I'd never met a child preacher before, neither had Rachel. So he was a no-brainer. He was definitely cast from the get-go. But we just tried to find a diverse group of kids.
And like that, Devon?
And it's interesting to compare the differences in success of these four boys. Rachel, the film is not only about the boys and the school, but also about the family situations that they've left behind. Was it important to show that, to understand what these kids had to face? Because some of these families were stable, but most of them were not.
Well, I think all the families had challenges. I think that it's incredibly important. I think that to point the finger at the public school system and say, this is the reason why these kids are failing, is a disservice. I think that there is a holistic problem that's happening. And part of that is, of course, an individual's home life. So it was, you know, crucial to show that.
Devon, when you saw the film later, when it was complete, was it painful to watch the scenes of your mother struggling to overcome her problems?
Actually, it did not, you know. I felt something, but, you know, I just, you know, it's life and, you know, it's reality. So.
And you already knew that she had those problems with drugs.
Yes.
So, but at the same time, that's what you left behind. Was it important for you to be in a situation where that was not a daily problem for you to have to deal with?
Well, not really. I just had to deal with it, you know, her being that way. You know, I couldn't change the fact that, you know, she was. You know, so it wasn't as much, you know, as you know, I felt sad or I was upset or, you know, I was emotional watching the film and watching her, you know, being who she, you know, who she was. So, you know.
Heidi, one of the students, Mantre, who had been suspended 8 times from school, says he wants to get his master's degree, his bachelor's degree, a PhD, and TLC on the road to becoming a chemologist. Was he the most ambitious of the kids, considering just how troubled he was?
You know, he it was hard to say. At the beginning, he didn't seem like the most ambitious. He seemed like he had the highest hill to climb. But he was competitive, and he was a smart mouth, and he was he always, you know, was involved in anything that was going on. So I guess we shouldn't be so surprised that he found academic competition eventually at the Baraka School. He channeled all of his energy into that. So he did become one of the most competitive kids with the others.
And then when he came back to Baltimore, he wound up, the second highest math score in the whole high school system?
Yeah, he got the highest math score in his school and a very high score across Baltimore. And I think he even surprised himself. And he sort of started to wear it like a badge. Like, I'm smart. Not only am I cute, not only am I fly and cool and funny, I'm smart. So he really started to enjoy that role.
Devon, what happened to the friends of yours who didn't go to Baraka? What did they do? Did most of them still graduate from high school?
Most of them scattered. I didn't really have much friends in school. Most of my good friends were friends from to my church or friends around my way. It wasn't much of friends in the school, but just mainly associates. So.
Rachel, so far this sounds like a completely happy story, but it didn't turn out that way. Why did the Baraka School close its doors after the boys had spent only 1 year there?
Well, you'll have to go see the movie to find out. But they closed the school. The school had been around for 7 years, and it happened to shut down permanently when we were filming. And the reason the school said it was pulling its funding was because of the dangerous political situation happening in Kenya.
And Kenya has probably less danger than most of the states in East Africa.
Sure, yeah. As overall, the country is fairly stable compared to the countries around it, and.
But Daniel Arap Moi was leaving office, a new administration was coming in.
It was a little tumultuous. However, the kids were deep in the bush of Africa, literally nothing around them but, goats and Maasai. And it was extremely calm and peaceful place where they were. So, it kind of raises the question if, what's more dangerous for the kids to be in.
Well, Devon, when the film starts, a number of kids get homesick and want to go home. And then as the year develops, they all seem to really make a commitment. But when you learned that the school was closing its doors, were you disappointed? Were you looking forward to going back?
Well yes. I was looking forward to go back because, I had a whole lot of stuff on layaway. I had carvings and the different, things. And plus, I was so excited, to go back, and I was looking forward to go back, and to stay in Africa again. But when I found out that the school was closing, some part of me was upset, but the other part of me was saying, okay, they gave you this, and now you have to take this and make it, and make it to what you want it to be. So, I wasn't going to give up, and I wasn't going to, stop and say, hey, well, it's closing, so I'm going to go back to my old ways. I was going to take what I learned from that year, and I was going to make some out of it. And, I was determined to become a better person. I was determined to start, passing my classes and making honor roll as I am now, and meeting with some of the people that I know and doing the things that I do. So, they helped me. But now, I have to go on,
Well, one of the lessons of the Baraka School was self-motivation. Obviously, you learned that lesson.
Yes, sir.
Heidi, you couldn't have known that you'd be documenting the last year of the school when you started this. What effect did that have on you? Did you realize that, in a way, that was an interesting plot development?
Well, you never know what's going to happen, which is the beauty of documentary film. But we were shocked. I mean, we had planned to follow this program for 2 years, the entire course it ran, the 7th and 8th grade, and then what happened to the kids when they came home. We were completely shocked. I think we were more devastated than the kids because those kids, correct me if I'm wrong, Devon, but a lot of those kids We're used to disappointment. We're used to being told one thing and the reality being another. So we were more upset than they were. They were like, okay, this happened. I got to go back to public school. I'm going to make the best of it. But our friends who were not close to these boys and who are also in the film industry said, you guys just got a gift from the narrative gods, because that plot twist made the film much more relevant, much more interesting, and actually much more a reality of what happens to these programs.
Now, Rachel, one of the boys, Romesh, asks, why can't we do it in Baltimore? They could have set up something in Baltimore. Would that have been okay with you, Devon?
Well, yes, sir. I mean, and that's the question right now. You know, many people ask me, and, you know, I just recently talked to the mayor Saturday, the mayor of Baltimore over the phone, and you know, and we was, you know.
Does he consult you, the mayor of Baltimore?
Yes.
Devon,
yes,
can you tell me what we can do to fix up our schools?
Yes. He's a good friend of mine. Sim and his wife are good friends of mine. So you know,
Were the class president in the ninth grade, so you're an important figure.
So I mean, it's the question, you know, why can't we do it, and you know, here in Baltimore, and or why can't we open up another school here in the U.S.? You know, I get asked so many times, you know, what is it that we can do to help the city schools and to help students, you know, and they can do it. I mean, you know, the state is putting money into machines and slots and hotel buildings and all these other things, and not, you know, and push our schools less. I mean, our schools don't have the right resources that we need. We don't have the books that we need, and you know, and I feel as though if you're going to pay billions of dollars to build a slot, a spot for lottery tickets and for horse tracks and stuff, I mean, you can spend money building a school and putting funding these kids to go to school. So, I mean,
because that's the future.
Yes.
Now, Heidi and Rachel, before you collaborated, you had pretty very different jobs, didn't you, Heidi? You worked for E, the famous cable with an exclamation E, producing true Hollywood stories in
LA. I can't believe you got me on that.
Rachel,
oh,
you were working for your mom's detective agency?
Correct.
This doesn't sound like an ideal partnership.
Well, we were very
made in heaven.
It was made in heaven. We're resourceful, we're persistent, we're curious, and yes, we come from varied backgrounds, and I'm glad we found each other because we have similar interests, and it's an adventure making these films.
And you've done some shorter documentaries for VH1 and A&E, but this had to have been a very different kind of experience.
Well, this took years to make. It was unfunded for the first half of it, and it was something that both of us felt incredibly strongly about finishing, especially once the school closed. It was not a matter of if. It didn't matter how long it took. We had to do it right as well.
Well, then it got picked up by Think Films, which has released Murderball has been a hit. The Aristocrats has been a hit. So maybe documentaries
rub off on us.
And also maybe Americans are more interested in seeing documentaries now than they were in the past.
There's no better time to making documentaries. It's a renaissance. I mean, even the Oscar list this year, the short list, 15 films. I mean, there's a lot of quality films. It's a wonderful time to be doing this.
And some of the boys have made appearances on the HBO show The Wire, which shows life on Baltimore streets. Is that any? Do you have anything to do with that?
Well, a little bit. We became friends with the one of the executive producers and head writers of the show, Ed Burns. Originally, now we've become buddies with some of the other writers as well.
Yes,
but he saw The Boys of Baraka, and you know, as a writer of The Wire, he also wrote The Corner, the miniseries, which has a lot of the same subject matter.
Devon, do you know him too?
Yes, Bill Zorzi is one of the writers that have been helping me get into The Wire.
He's on it, too.
You're on The Wire.
Yes, sir.
Are you playing a boy preacher? What are you doing?
No, I'm actually playing a truant kid.
A truant? Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yes.
Away
well,
from
know,
type, though. Hopefully. Playing against type, for sure.
Just think back to when you were 9 or 10, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it was easy to do that. I was used to it back in the day.
Back in the day.
But I'll tell you, one of the more uncomfortable and weird ironies is that Richard, another one of the kids in the film, was cast as a drug dealer on The Wire last season. And that while I was happy that he was getting paid to do a job and that he was around, you know, working people and that it was a good experience for him and he got paid nice money, there was something that was really kind of creepy in a way, that all this effort's being put forth to avoid this child to become a drug dealer, and yet he's playing one on television.
Stranger than fiction, yeah.
I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Devon Brown.
You're welcome.
And the two filmmakers, Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady. The film actually is now playing at the Film Forum at 209 West Houston Street. And this Wednesday, both Rachel and Heidi gather. You'll be answering questions after the 8 p.m. screening.
That's right. We'll hope to see everyone there.
For more information, visit our website at www.wnyc.org. And thank you all so much for being on my show today.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of The Leonard LoPate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.